Welcome to the Scale Up podcast, where we uncover the real stories behind South Africa's entrepreneurs. From game-changing wins to brutal setbacks, we dive into the hustle, strategy, and resilience that drive business success. Joining us in every episode is our in-house expert, Nicholas Tieder, a seasoned entrepreneur with 15 years of experience. He currently works closely with ambitious teams to build scalable systems using the scaling up methodology. Together, Nick and I sit down with South Africa's top founders to unpack their journeys, lessons, and the realities of scaling a business. In today's episode, we are chatting to Ian Thompson, co-founder of Too Much Wi-Fi and Enough Ventures. Too Much Wi-Fi offers affordable high-speed internet to underserved communities. Ian is currently focused on Enough Ventures, where he's building a value-driven platform to equip first-time internet users with coaching, digital skills, networks, and capital to boost economic mobility. Before all this, he was a strategy consultant, an entrepreneur in residence, and even a US Marine combat veteran. So Ian, let's chat about Too Much Wi-Fi, the company that is revolutionizing internet access in South African townships. Can you walk us through how the concept came to life?
The story of Too Much Wi-Fi is quite interesting. My co-founder, Jonathan, software engineer, and he had given himself a budget to support his cleaning lady with internet. And so he was thinking about giving her 500 rand a month to connect her and her family to the internet. And she lives in Khayelitsha in Site C. And ironically, her home was exactly 500 meters away from the N2, where there is a fiber line passing. And so that was kind of his primary challenge that he was looking at trying to solve. And on the other side, I kind of approached it as how can we actually activate this need to deploy internet access as an employment mechanism for people from the township.
Doing my research on you and Too Much Wi-Fi, it seems like you were kind of stuck with a founder's dilemma. Nick, can you please define a founder's dilemma?
Yeah, the founder's dilemma is when the founder of a company or the founders of a company grow a company and they come at certain inflection points where they are not sure if they are the right persons anymore, where they're faced with challenges they haven't seen before, and where they think, like, what do I actually have to do here? Like, do I need to hire other people? Do I need to change myself? Do I have to upskill myself? Or are the processes wrong? So the word dilemma implies that you don't really know where the problem stands, but you're surrounded by problems. And that's especially true with scaling companies. When you're scaling fast from 0 to 10 to 50 to 100 employees, which is exactly what, Ian, what you've been through, right?
Definitely. And my initial intent was never to be the operational leader of the organization. Jonathan and I both always envisioned that operational leader to be a Black South African to run it. And so we kind of saw ourselves as stewards of the idea. And I think that also presented almost a different layer of the founder's dilemma of like, okay, now that it's going well, now we found product market fit, it's clear we didn't have all the skills and pieces in place or capital to kind of move things forward, but it certainly was a dilemma.
So as Too Much Wi-Fi scaled, there were obviously moments where you had to redefine your role, delegate responsibilities to allow the company to grow. That is part of the founder's dilemma. Could you color that in for us?
Yes, we were having some success, but the expertise in the room, namely Jonathan as a software engineer, and me, we're running short on skills and short on focus necessary to kind of transition into the level of actually operational excellence.
Can you share what kind of growth we're talking about in terms of employees and numbers of customers, if you want
sure.
to disclose that?
I mean, yeah, no problem. I mean, I'll speak for the early days. You know, we were selling water in the Karoo, and for any non-South African listeners, Karoo is the big desert in South Africa. Very easy to sell water in the desert, right? And so that's essentially what we were facing this challenge where if we provided the water, people were going to buy it. So to speak about growth, We were in double-digit monthly growth for the first 3 years. And at one point, I kind of looked around and you were about 120 people.
How many customers do you have today at Too Much Wi-Fi?
Tens of thousands of installations and then hundreds of thousands of actual users because every installation effectively serves as a hotspot.
Letting go versus staying. That's probably a question that you've asked yourself as Too Much Wi-Fi scaled. At what point did you personally feel it was time to step back from your role as founder and CEO at the time? And how did you handle the conversation with your investors who probably insisted that you stay?
I was pretty adamant and clear from the very beginning, and I think that made it very hard to raise money, to be honest, right? Because if you kind of set out saying, "Hey, listen, like we're raising money and we're going to find another CEO," it doesn't really land very well. And there were a few investors that were adamant that I stick around. I think I got a sprint of energy coming out of that investor's kind of insistence, and at that point, I knew, great, we just have to find an operational stud.
I mean, what makes you a bit different than most CEOs is that you obviously realized that you're out of your depth. You actually didn't want to continue as a sole founder or as a co-founder, but you were constrained by not having enough capital to get those key people around you, and also by having built the organization around your very complex skill set makes it very hard to replace. But at least you were aware of it. One of the biggest hurdles in companies we work with is typically that the founder created the company. It's his or her baby. The processes around the founder, like he knows everything, she knows everything, and getting to the realization that you either have to grow significantly as a person or being able to step and to put in other people, even at a larger scale, even to consider stepping out if you're not willing or able to grow, that's a very painful exercise for most founders to go through. And since companies go through very different growth stages, that moment where you have to challenge yourself comes back every year, like at 10 employees, at 50 employees, at 100 employees. And it's an open conversation with yourself and also with others in order to challenge, am I still the best person for that company to grow?
What did you enjoy more, being in the field or being the dreamer, getting the ideas and the strategy?
I think I was only able to see the promise in the field. It was actually seeing the junior staff executing and being able to recognize that junior staff member is a representative of millions of young South Africans.
Do you think that being closer to the ground level of your business actually inspires you to come up with better strategy?
I think that's exactly why founders play such a critical role in that first 100 customer cycle, right? You need those. An organization will benefit from having rapid feedback loops at the very beginning. It's the only place you get the speed of the feedback loop necessary. So, quite literally, by doing door-to-door sales in Imizamietu, it was very apparent to me what we needed to do to simplify our customer relationship management tools so that we would be able to support a junior staff member making a sale in the field.
In your experience working with scaling businesses, what are the biggest warning signs indicating that a founder is holding back their company?
The biggest challenge for founders is typically not market conditions or funding or execution. It's actually the ability of the founder to evolve. There are a couple of signs that you are stuck in the founder's dilemma. For example, if you refuse to delegate or create bottlenecks by yourself, leading into micromanagement and limiting the team's autonomy. You won't hire some senior leaders that you definitely need because you're fearing loss of control, and you cling possibly to past strategies that brought you there, but even though you realize that growth slows at that moment.
At some point, you're going to achieve some form of burnout, right? Like, case in point, I gained about 17 kilograms during that 3 year period from 2019 to 2022.
And lean muscle mass on.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much. I mean, food really became one of my kind of stress coping mechanisms. And the fact of the matter is, entrepreneurship is extremely stressful, right? A lot of pressure. Taking money from investors, especially when they're friends, like so many things really kind of add to that. And then you just want to be successful at some point. But if that period goes for too long, it certainly did for me.
It absolutely leads into burnout.
you have things on your list that a founder can do to break through these founder's dilemma issues?
Talk off the list would be that you got to step into the CEO role fully, right? You come from a founder that's operatively very, very active and involved, becoming a leader. And in order to grow people around you, grow people larger than you in the extreme, having functional experts aside, in order to build a leadership team, right? You can build a company up to 10, maybe 20 people when you as a founder are at the core, like a spider in the web, doing almost everything, having invented everything and knowing everything. But at that point, you have to realize that that's getting bigger than you, and then creating great people around you, support A players, like making a very strong effort to get the best people for each function, and having them, developing them and keeping them in the company is the biggest lever you can have. So like, what's an A player? A player changes over the time, a trajectory of a company. Like, what brought you to 10 or 20 employees with great co-founders, great first employees that you dearly love because they support you in that difficult and unclear period, might not be the persons who can lead you to the next stage of growth. You mentioned the structure was sometimes missing. What makes a company solid, scalable, and also dependable for outsiders and insiders? So there's a very complex set of capabilities you have to have as a founder, but also as the other leader in the leadership team. And being aware of those, being aware how they change, and being able to adapt, to change, to learn, to grow fast personally as well, will be the and decisive choice whether you stay or not, whether somebody stays or not.
Let's say a founder is at that critical point where they actually need to rethink their role, but they don't know how. Is there a tool or an approach or a framework that will help this transition?
The most important tool and framework is what we call it, clarifying your BHAG, like your big, hairy, audacious goal, aligning everyone in the company around a common goal, and getting top leaders committed to the company engaged, and everybody in the company engaged. Because there's a huge difference if you want to build a skyscraper or a duplex. You need different processes, different people, and you have to make sure that everybody understands where you're going. Once this is clear, you need to build this team around you. As I just mentioned, the leadership team is very essential in making sure that for those roles, for that task, for that long-term goal, you need to align yourself. Am I actually the person who can do that? Or what other roles can I do and what can I not do and what do I not want to do? And then getting others as functional experts, like who can do sales, who can do marketing, who can do finance, and then having good people developing in that, A players, like really committed team members that you always have. They really love to work with other A players. It's one of the most important motivational factors. If you have a couple of great A players in a room and they're allowed to solve very complex problems, they thrive irrespective of pay and other structural elements. But if they're B and C and D players, like others that are not committed, not fitting to the company, either culturally or performance-wise, and if you don't move those out of the company, then that culture doesn't thrive and it doesn't develop, and you actually distract the A players from working properly, and they check out mentally. But you never have to motivate a great A team player, leadership team member, right? Like, you can only demotivate them. If you need to motivate somebody, that's already a very strong warning sign. Like on some operational staff level it might be, but on the leadership team level, people can only be demotivated, and they can be very easily demotivated by micromanagement, by ineffective processes, by a dominant founder. Like, you can be the single most effective source of demotivating people. Easy to say, let's get top people on the company, let's find A players, let's build a proper team. But you need financial stability. So you need to set up a financial safety net. And for that, a healthy cash flow is really essential for every company. And when I was a founder, I always thought, like, when I grown, when I figured out market and product market fit with the company, and when I'm building the company and adding clients, cash flow follows automatically, but it doesn't. Like, cash flow is the oxygen of a company, like of the business. Without that, you cannot operate, you cannot grow, you cannot hire the best people. So having and scaling up, we have a methodology. It's for the power of one, and you can look at different levers of profitability drivers. And profit is not coming out of the company automatically, especially cash flow. You have to manage it actively besides doing all other things, which then frees up cash and gives you the ability to get better material, get better equipment, better technology, better products, and also better people.
I can actually summarize it as there are four topics that a founder ought to think about and actually fixate on. And that's people, strategy, execution, and cash. So when a founder is faced with a founder's dilemma, they struggle with one or more of these areas. In your experience, Nick, and then in your own experience, Ian, which one of these four themes appear to be the biggest hurdle for most founders as they scale?
That's a very good question. I mean, they're all very important, all four dimensions. In my experience, like, founders really most often resist the necessity to challenge the people dimension, right? Because in the early stages, you build this company around your peers, around people who are with you on your side, burning the midnight oil, building the company. And then eventually, when you're coming to different stage, say from 10 to 20, you might realize that what brought you here and the people that brought you here doesn't get you there. And that is such a tough decision. That's a tough realization. And having the guts to react on this and having the guts to realize, okay, I might not... They might be able to stay, but I might have to hire somebody who gets into one or two leadership roles above them, which is a real downer for most people. Maybe realizing that somebody who brought you there is not engaged anymore, doesn't do it at all, and you might actually even have to lose somebody at that stage. Those are so tough decisions that most founders are struggling with it, and holding on through these misalignments of too long can seriously stifle your growth. It might cost you the company if you don't act on it.
Ian, which one was your biggest hurdle?
A good strategy and a good initial people is what actually enables capital to present itself, right? And obviously execution is what's going to allow follow-on capital, and that's going to only happen if they have good people, right? But I think at the end of the day, the constraint is probably more concisely said is you've only got three things. You've got time, you've got capital, you've got people. And so how you address and kind of maximize the kind of efficacy of those three things, and that comes down to execution and strategy.
Especially in a capital intensive, fast growing company as yours, growth eats cash like a wildfire. So you're going to have the people that you start with. You need to make a clear strategy that everybody is aligned. Having an execution that is flawless and actually producing that cash in order not to lose money by mistakes, but too many mistakes. You have to have an operational model that works flawlessly. Then you can get enough cash, and then you can hire the next level of people or grow them or raise their salaries. And with that, you can do another strategy and another round. It's a flywheel that really works, and you have to address them all. That's where scaling up is a very powerful method, because there are so many books you can read, hundreds of books, and they're all great. But where do you start at what time? And it's such a high stake game what you're in, and you have to make sure that you're working on the best practices out there in order to minimize the number of mistakes you make on that journey. We say strategy without execution is a dream. And not that everybody has a clear strategy, but even if you have a clear strategy, if you don't execute on it consistently and properly, nothing happens. So there's so many truisms out there and so many obvious topics. But how do you actually do that in a lifetime with a family, with growing company, with all these challenges and all these curveballs coming to you? What's the pragmatic guidance that you can have as a founder to prevent burnout? I had two burnouts in my initial first companies in Germany. It was very painful. I was on the sofa out for 3 months, felt I could never work again. It was absolutely scary. And because there's just too much going on and too little advice back then of how to structure and how to focus and what to do when. And that's what I found in helping founders right now and helping leaderships right now in order to navigate those challenges. This quarter we do this quarter we do this. That's how you set up a strategy. That's how you set up a consistent execution plan. And that's how you extract profitability in order to get great people in. And that helps a lot. And building a company is not a sprint. It's a marathon, if not an ultra marathon. And why couldn't it also be fun? If you come home to your family being actually energized rather than depleted.
As a founder, you wear several hats in the journey of scaling. After listening to both Ian and Nick today, getting the right people on board, having the CEO mindset is absolutely cardinal. But if you want to know more about your big, hairy, audacious goal and how to determine that, how to implement the top grading methodology, book a call. We would love to chat. Scale the good.